In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Great insight. Just ahead, we go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's one of our favorite guys that we have here on the show, and we're thrilled to have him back with us. Former head coach of the St. Louis Rams, one of the great offensive coordinators in NFL history, now working with the 33rd team, a terrific website. He's Mr. Mike Martz. Hello, Coach. How you doing?
All right, Coach.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing? Is football started yet?
We think it's slightly underway, yes. How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
Hey, Browns and Vikings working out together. Did you like those?
No. No. And every year we did one. But, you know, every year we'd come out of there. The last 2 years I was the head coach, we didn't do them. We just would lose players injury-wise. They'd become very contentious. And, you know, it depends on the other head coach. It really does. But still, players kind of rev it up, and it gets there's a lot of fights. No matter what you tell them, no matter what you do, there's just things that happen.
So it's funny you say that, Coach, because all that goes through my head was Gerard Mayo yesterday at a press conference saying that if any starter gets into a fight, they're playing the whole second preseason game, and if any reserve gets into a fight, they're not playing at all. And so yeah, it's funny you have that idea. It makes me laugh.
Well, it's just it's just too much of a risk. The benefit now is really substantial compared to back then. We had, you know, the 4, and if you were in the Hall of Fame game, 5, you know, preseason games. Now, with more limited practice time and fewer preseason games, these kinds of practices are invaluable. But, you know, I hated it because we would always lose a good player for some time, sometimes on pup, sometimes for a week or two. But nonetheless, you know, what we came out of here at times was debilitating.
Mike Martz joining us. Mike, yesterday one of the Browns rookies, Mike Hall Jr., was arrested on some domestic violence charges. And those are the allegations. As a team, how do you deal with off-the-field situations like that? I mean, what are you supposed to do with the player? How are you supposed to react?
Well, I think the key word is allegations. You know, until you know for sure, you know, what's happened, you can't act on it. You just can't. I we've had a couple of those things that, you know, my career we've gone through, and what I told the team was we don't know the facts. We don't know. We'll just ride this thing out. And until it's finalized and we do know, things are going to remain the same. You know, he's on our team. And, you know, the allegations are allegations, and they may be accurate, they may not be, but you know, that's not in our power to figure that stuff out, and that's not our job.
So, Coach, as well, you were saying you weren't a big fan of the joint practices. Does that mean you're a bigger fan of the preseason games? And how do you feel about the rumblings going around about preseason games possibly being eliminated going into the future?
Well, I'm a big fan of the preseason games because you had, especially with the fewer practices and the touch football that they're doing on fall camp, you've got guys you're trying to make the team and you're trying to figure out who you have and what you have. And sometimes you may be putting a new offense or defense in as your new coach. Yeah, I'm a big fan of them. I do think, though, that, you know, during that COVID era when they didn't have them, they look back at that and look at the season, and I think they're probably pretty happy with that season. They probably figured that they could do away with it.
So the Browns walk into this season, Mike. We can sit here and analyze and talk and throw out ideas and concepts and everything else, and everything we've ever said and anything anybody else has ever written about this comes back to, can Deshaun Watson find himself?
Oh, no question.
Can he?
Yeah, no question.
Can he?
I don't know. You know, he got on a run down there in Houston. I just don't know. He didn't play well last year at all, I didn't think. Some of it is the mesh with the offense, the coordinator and the head coach and whatnot. I don't know what that is. But the team is so well coached and they play so well all the time. He was the Achilles heel, I felt, last year, and that's a hard pill to take. You've got to step it up. It has to be this year. He's got to get it going. There's no question.
Is it weird to you that the team played pretty well without him? And you could make the argument their best football was with Joe Flacco. And even the year before, when he was suspended, Jacoby Brissett did a pretty solid job.
I mean, that's why I say the team is really well coached and they're a good football team, really good. And he was, like I said, the Achilles heel. And that can't be lost on him over the last 2 years, that they're better off without him. You know, you got to look in the mirror and you got to figure that out, I would think. He's got to be the reason why you win. He just does. If he can get it going like he had before, he had so many of his big plays, though, guys, that were kind of ad lib or after the fact, you know, breaking out of the pocket or whatever. The discipline of what they do there, if he can acquiesce to that, if he can absorb that and do that, then I think he'll really grow and get better. But I just don't know. I'm not there. I don't know. I don't know him. I really don't know the system. But I know he was kind of a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants, and that's not what they do.
Mike Bartz joining us, former head coach in the league, the offense coordinator of the greatest show on turf, Super Bowl champion as well, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. You can read him, see him at the33rdteam.com as well. So, Coach, Kevin Stefanski got rid of a bunch of guys who have been in this organization on the offensive side for a good period of time, brought in a new running backs coach, tight end coach, offensive coordinator, offensive line coach. What's it like overhauling that whole staff, and what does that tell you about the Browns this season?
Well, I think sometimes you do need to do that. I think you get into a rut at times, and, well, this is just the way we've always done it. I've never done that like that, you know, that kind of thing. And the mesh between that staff is so important for the quarterback. Everybody's got to be on the same page and pulling the same direction. And I know it sounds silly and an obvious statement, but unfortunately in the league, it's not like that. You got guys, they're independent contractors, all kind of looking for the next job, being a coordinator, head coach, this, that, and the other thing. And to get them all on the same page and get them energized about what you're doing and buy-in, the buy-in is such a big deal. You know, sometimes guys start going through the motions. They got a good contract. They just kind of go. It happens. You got to move them out of there, you know, and get some people in there that can kind of re-energize things and bring some different thoughts and approaches to it and get these guys going.
Mike, as a head coach who's going to call the plays again, Kevin Stefanski, and I think he's done a nice job calling the plays, but he changes offensive coordinators. So does a new offensive coordinator mean a big change of offense, or does a new offensive coordinator for a head coach who calls the plays mean that the coordinator is coordinating exactly what the head coach wants on offense?
I don't think so. You know, I think when you do that, you want to bring a guy in who has similar beliefs but has some new ideas about things. Because you, as a head coach and a play caller, you have a limited amount of time, to be honest with you. So you got to get somebody in there that kind of believes in what you're doing, obviously, in the buy-in I was talking about earlier with the assistants, and yet can bring some new and fresh ideas in to help with what you have, because you're always morphing in and out of things with the personnel that you have. You got to grow every year with some different things. You do. Defense is just zero in on you. So I think it's a very healthy thing, but they're not going to – he's got to be somebody who's bought into it and knows it, but and yet has a background that can bring a couple different things in. You know, LA did that last year, and I think it's very healthy.
So, Coach, it's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, Kevin Stefanski is so well-versed in the Gary Kubiak offense where, as it's always been explained to me, it's almost like the coach is playing quarterback where he's saying, you're going to throw here, you're going to throw here. And then in comes Ken Dorsey, who's a part of this spread offense world with a whole lot of choice routes and option routes and all that stuff. Do you think those two worlds can mesh?
Oh, yes, they can. Absolutely. You know, I went through that through my career. You pick up different things and you incorporate it. It doesn't mean you buy that whole system, but there's elements of that spread offense that they can absolutely use that would help the quarterback in terms of getting the ball out quicker, a little bit more discipline, those kinds of things. There's no question. And Kev's got to grow too. He knows that. And I think that's why it's so healthy that, you know, you bring somebody in with a different mindset, but wants to do what you're doing and make it happen. So that relationship is incredibly important.
Mike Martz joining us, former head coach of the St. Louis Rams and one of the great offensive minds in NFL history. The Browns went out and made Amari Cooper happy enough that he's in camp and ready to go this year, Mike, with a little bit of guaranteed money, a little bit of bonus money. He's 30 years old. He's been terrific throughout his career for three different teams. Did you find when you were coaching in the NFL that 30 was a thing you need to pay attention to if you're a front office, if you're a coaching staff when it came to that wide receiver position? Because maybe that's why the Browns were hesitant to give him multi-years.
It's funny you said that. Not so much with receivers, but I was told when I came into the league that when a running back hits 30, he's usually done, his legs go. It's a different time, and by that I mean guys train differently in the off season. Their diet's different. Their whole approach is they're consumed with being in shape and getting their body and keeping their body in great shape. You know, Isaac was like that. Torrey was like that. There's going to be some diminishing at some point. Now, it could be 30, could be 32, but even with a little bit of diminished speed, how effective can they be? And I think that's a big question. He's so doggone competitive. I love the way he competes. Even if he was a step slower here and there, I think he's going to be a terrific player this year.
When he's such a precise route runner on top of that, yes, coach, where just even with body angles, he can make up for that lack of speed.
Well, he's in and out of cuts like we used to like. We, you know, there's no wasted movement. He doesn't chop his feet down. He hits it. He does real tight turns and snaps to it and then goes after the ball. I've always had great admiration for him and thought that he was a terrific player.
All right, so, Coach, if you are either the San Francisco 49ers or the Pittsburgh Steelers, are you giving Brandon Ayuk a top five contract and going, that guy's my number one receiver, let's go?
Steelers, yes. The 49ers, probably not. I think the Steelers, obviously, this would be a terrific get for him, for them. They could, he'd be the center of the offense, more or less. And, of course, Wilson, you know, all those guys would be centered around him and what they can do to get him the ball, et cetera. He's one of many in San Francisco. I think his value would be much higher in Pittsburgh, to be honest with you.
That's interesting. If you're a team right now that's kind of struggling at quarterback a little bit, and let's just – Pittsburgh's looking. Is it going to be Russell Wilson? I would assume. Can Justin Fields beat him out? There's Sam Darnold now in Minnesota who at least is going to start at the beginning of the season. You're looking at some of these guys, and I would think, Mike, the way the quarterback market is going absolutely nuts – is getting a guy on a relative bargain, and I know Russell Wilson's making a ton, but the Steelers aren't paying him. Is that a good thing and maybe a future trend in the NFL? Or are you going to have to pay these guys the $50 million and get a guy, commit to him, and this is our guy?
Well, I think the situation is also different, to be honest. I'm not dodging that. I just think it's such a unique situation there. They get a chance to get him for them cheap, and he might have a year or two left, buy them a little bit of time to get the guy in that they want and yet win. And this is why that's why some of those are bringing in a great receiver would have a terrific effect on them. I think they're running in place a little bit at that position. They got to build around. They just think his attitude and his experience can help bring the rest of the team up, and then eventually they'll replace him. But I think each situation is so different, and the value of the quarterbacks will always be the highest, and they'll always be going up. There's a trend you got to have, especially in today's game where the ball's thrown around a lot so much, you know.
Mike, you guys found Kurt Warner. You know, he had been around a little bit, but you gave him the first chance because Trent Green got hurt and he steps in. Is that, I mean, how likely is that in today's NFL? You know, the 49ers find Brock Purdy, you know, after they had drafted Trey Lance third overall and moved up to get him. I just wonder, are teams going to have to, you know, throw that huge money at guys, or can you actually develop a player who can become somebody who plays really well for you at a really team-friendly price?
Well, Mark Bulger, we brought him along, and John Kitney eventually, and we drafted Fitzpatrick. My deal has always been with that quarterback position. A couple of givens. They've got to be able to be very accurate, smart guys that can see, diagnose, and get the ball out quickly. That's a given. After that, I don't care how big they're necessarily, but the thing that the common thread that they all had is they've been kicked around the league a little bit. They're free agents or late-round picks, and they felt like they had something to prove. And a guy that's talented, that's got a burr up his rear end, so to speak, that's got something to prove, is a dangerous guy. And I love those guys, and we just made a living on those guys because they thrived on it. You know, it was their time. They were ready for it. And, you know, nothing's ever been given to them. They had to go the long, hard road, so to speak. And all those guys I mentioned were those guys. And I don't know that you can do that anymore because you just don't have the time with them in the offseason. And you got to have them in the offseason development. That's the worst thing the league does right now, is develop quarterbacks.
Interesting. Why do you think it is that they become so bad at developing quarterbacks?
When it's such a critical thing.
Yeah.
You don't have time with them. You know, in the offseason, we'd start off on March 1st, and we'd be on the field. We'd be in meeting rooms. We go for months. We'd throw 7-on-7, 1-on-1 routes. You know, the timing of it, you could experiment with some things with them. You can find out what they can do better than other things. You can help them in things that they're not doing so well. You know, just the mechanics, you know, everything. And, you know, you just don't have any of that anymore. And then you get into the fall camp, and you're so limited with reps now that, you know, the guys that are trying to make it, they don't get reps. Now you cut back the preseason games or get rid of them. My gosh, the thing the league needs is they need an off-season league, a winter league, so to speak, that they can, like they used to have, that develops those guys.
Coach, we can't tell you how much we like having you with us, and we look forward to talking with you throughout the season.
Thank you. Thank you for the time and the info.
Well, thanks, guys, for having me. I always enjoy it. Thank you.
Mike Martz, former NFL head coach, and again, one of the great offensive coaches in NFL history, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, now with the 33rd team. Go listen to Mike. Go look at all his analysis. He is outstanding. And he just made some really interesting thoughts about quarterbacks. A 2020 with Odie.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
And Mike Martz is one of those guys. And like when I asked him about off-the-field problems with players, he said, okay, there are allegations. It's not my job to deal with that. I got to coach him if he's here. I coach him. And I thought, Okay, there's the coaching perspective on that. You can't worry about that. That's not your deal. It's interesting. When I asked him about quarterbacks, oh my goodness. Now, he developed a lot of quarterbacks.
Yeah,
but I thought it was really.
I forgot a chunk.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, because Mark Bulger was a pretty good NFL quarterback. I think he was a third-round pick.
Yeah.
And they developed him into a starter. Trent Green was the starting quarterback and then got hurt. Kurt Warner had kicked around a little bit. He had been in Green Bay, you know, in camp with Green
Bay. Bagging groceries.
And I loved that he said, these guys who have kicked around a little bit have a chip on their shoulder and they're motivated. And I agree with that completely. I always did. It was interesting to hear him say it. But the problem, as Mike Martz said, is that they don't develop quarterbacks in the league anymore because there's no time nor place to develop them. And to me, that's such a huge mistake that the NFL is making. And that's why in the past, you and I have talked about, okay, you've got the UFL now?
Sure. Whatever the spring ball league is.
Assign quarterbacks. Work a deal with them. Send your quarterbacks there. Send DTR there. Let DTR be a starting quarterback for a spring team. Let that happen to these second and third string guys in the NFL, the young guys who need developed. That helps solve some of your quarterback problem, does it not? You would think.
If you could... The problem is I don't know if the league wants to make any kind of an investment in a minor league per se. I think that's almost what's holding this back, is to have enough people to have 30 minor league teams, right? I wonder if that, or 32 minor league teams, I should say. I wonder if that's what's holding this back, because what Mike Martz lays out there is right. We're having to simplify all of these offenses because these quarterbacks aren't at the level that they once were, because everything is so rushed now, because everybody's job is on the line if you don't succeed immediately. From, gosh, high school coaches to college coaches. You can even look maybe a little bit at professional-ish youth coaches as well. There's so much more heat on these guys to succeed now than it is to build for the next level. And so when he says that, he might be onto something. The question I have is there enough finances and humans to have 32 minor league systems that could be used to development?
But what if you had 12 and, you know, every team doesn't have to send a quarterback there. You know, you want to send a quarterback and you've got like 12 guys, because I'm sure a lot of guys wouldn't want to go. And I'm sure a team wouldn't want to send some guys. You know, for instance, the Browns' backup quarterback is Jameis Winston. Do you want to send Jameis? No, he doesn't need to go.
No, not at all.
But DTR sure does.
Yeah. You know, or...
And it would make those spring leagues, A, more interesting to watch, because there would be a little bit more NFL fandom following those. And B, would really give it a point, because if you're developing offensive talent that you're going to see in the NFL, boom. Win-win.
Well, and there's guys that you could think of who were decent-sized names in college who kind of had a late flyer taken on them. Like Hayden Hooker always pops into my head, the kid from Tennessee who
now
lit the
Detroit.
World on fire now in Detroit, who sustained the knee injury.
And isn't going to see the light of day behind Jared Goff.
And is older than you think. That's a guy who I think you could see in a minor league system going through reps and having coaches working with him and working on skills and then putting him in game situations to see if he's learning. The problem is, the NFL is the home of state secrets. They treat everything that happens in this building like it's the government. So you got the first problem is you would have to share with all of these other ideas, and all these other places would have to come together and share these ideas. And you know these teams are petrified of that concept. So that's the first flaw, is you would have to somehow knock down all of those walls that have been built between these teams. You would then, to have your idea of only having, 12 teams, 10 teams, something along those lines to develop these quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I think the only way you're going to do it is with 30 individual minor league teams. Because you don't want the Packers don't want to share their quarterback development ideas with the Saints, who have a hard time developing a quarterback. I think that's the problem. And while as silly as that concept sounds, it's how professional sports is operating. You know, what I'm doing, I don't want you to take what I'm doing because what I'm doing works. And if you start doing it, well, then now I'm not as special.
What did you think about what Mike Martz had to say about Deshaun Watson? He was not a fan.
No.
And he said
and he played.
He was their Achilles heel last year. And since he's been here. And he's got to get it. He's got to get it done. I mean, Mike's to the point. Mike is a offensive guru. And he's not a fan, at least of what he has seen so far.
I think when you hear it from that kind of a guy, it makes you open your eyes a little bit more. You've heard those sentiments coming from a lot of different angles. Again, not to keep referencing him, Robert Mays, of course, had the same thing when he went back and watched all the games, had the same thought process that was there. You've heard that coming from a lot of people that we have talked to on this show going, hey, it's make or break. You said it's make or break. Andy said it's make or break.
I think it has to be make or break. I don't think if it doesn't work this year, I don't think you can go into a fourth year with him.
I do not think so either. I think you're in a position where you're doing the Russell Wilson thing.
I do too.
Where you're going, I'll cut you a check. We need to move a different direction. And I partially wonder if bringing in a Jameis Winston was
the precursor to that move.
Part A, hey, we need a backup quarterback who has success in the league. And B, we need a backup quarterback if things get a little ugly. I don't know that. I'm reading into things. I hope that's not the case. I want Deshaun Watson to be awesome. I want the Deshaun Watson of 5 years ago who was must-see TV when he hit the field. You sat down, grabbed your popcorn, put your legs up, and went, I'm going to see something I've never seen before in my life. So let's go. I want that. But we're 5 years removed from that.
It just is a critical situation for the Browns. And obviously you have a huge investment, not only in draft capital, which you've paid, that's done, money, which you're still paying, and cap room, which could really affect you for a long time to come. We'll see. And the practices with the Vikings starting this afternoon. They're getting after it, and you will hear Kevin Stefanski after practice on the afternoon show with Nick and Dustin. Nick already here warming up. He's ready to go. We just had a huge international event where one guy in particular ruffled the feathers of absolutely everybody. That, and maybe we have a 92.3 The Fan correspondent for another international event coming up shortly. Details straight ahead. I'm Jeff Phelps. Baskin's out today. Menigan's in today. I think I've made this clear to you, Dan. One of my goals in life is something that you achieved today. And that is to win the lottery.
Yes, I am a proud winner of a lottery.
Now, it's not the lottery that I've wanted to win, but you've won a lottery. And I am impressed nonetheless because I want to win a lottery. I want to win, actually, you know, Mega Millions, Powerball. Right. But by God, at this point, I'll settle for any lottery.
And
we'll, the one you won?
And we'll know you've hit that lottery
when I don't show up.
We'll never see you again.
And the million that I promised both you and Baskin shows up in your accounts, and you've never seen me.
When you go full-bloke Johnny Carson, we never see you ever again.
Good night, everybody.
You're just out on a farm somewhere at your home in L.A., just enjoying life.
It's going to be great.
So I was informed this morning that hopefully I have been offered tickets.
This is phenomenal.
To the Open Championship in Northern Ireland.
That's awesome.
I know. I'm pumped.
International correspondent Dan Menigan calling us from the Open, also known as the British Open, but the Open Championship next year outside of Dublin.
Outside of Belfast. Yeah, we're in English territory. We're in the King's Land.
Oh, my goodness.
So
you found out when?
So I found out this morning. Now,
You just went to your email and there it was?
Uh-huh. Congratulations.
Did you just start laughing?
It was one of those. I started smiling and I went down and the lady friend looks up at me and she goes, oh, God, what? Which, first thing,
yeah,
my joy bringing her this much disdain, I think, truly is a peak moment in our relationship.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. When my joy brings that level of disdain, life is good.
And is it tickets for all four rounds?
No. So it's only right now for Thursday.
Really?
Hmm? So the first day of the Open Championship.
So you'd have to go all the way over there and just see the first round.
Correct. I'm still calling it worth it. It is
now,
a major.
And let's be all open here. You've talked about it before. You went to Ireland just a couple of months ago.
Right.
So you're almost familiar.
So we're we're working to find a fourth job to help cover this kind of thing, along with a third job.
We're gonna open a GoFundMe for Menegan. Send me to the Open.
Send me to the Open, please. No, but no, do not. But yeah, so we're gonna try to make this work. I've got the travel agent on it, aka the lady friend, and she is currently busting her chops to figure out how we can get this to work. And working her butt off to figure out all of the finances, where to stay, where to sit, all that kind of stuff, so that I can go walk around a giant plot of land that has been there for a very long time and watch people hit a golf ball as it rains on top of both of us. And she looks at me and goes, I hate you.
We spent how much money to come over here and stand in the rain?
And why are we standing in the rain wind is whipping?
Yeah, why am I wearing my winter coat?
Exactly.
July.
I don't think she totally knows that part yet. I'll probably have to break that to her tonight.
That'll be great.
And then it'll be really fun when I'm having to go by myself, because she's like, I'm not going to stand there in a giant lawn that's been mowed nicely and freeze my butt off. That's ridiculous.
Hey, don't tell her. just don't tell her.
I feel like I should, just due to the fact that, like, I think I'll get in more trouble if I don't.
Once you've invested money in it, you can go ahead and tell her.
I feel like if I don't, I'm going to be in more trouble. I think I could take the initial blow the minute she finds out, and then maybe can rebuild from there.
That's all right. That's not a bad idea.
So yeah, we might. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but you might have your Open Championship correspondent live from the Open as I hold a Guinness in my hand and talk to you.
That would be great.
At 10:15 in the morning.
I'm already looking forward to it. We've booked you, so get ready to go.
All right.
There's another international competition that just ended, and we're not going to go heavy on the Olympics here, but I've been thinking about this for several days, and I want your thoughts on this, Dano. Who in the heck did Noah Lyles make mad by speaking the truth? Okay? The man who won the 100-meter gold medal in the Olympics beforehand had dropped these words. Now, granted, he's a little out there when it comes to his ego.
He's a very confident young man.
Very confident.
And
I think,
by the way, you have to be to run that race.
I think he's terrific myself. And, you know, he's not afraid to speak. He comes out. He brings energy. He's going nuts. He pumps up his sport. He pumps up himself. I like the guy. He's cocky, but I like him. And he just made the comment when talking about world championships before the Olympics, and he said, you know, the NBA, he said, why do they say world championship? They're not the world champs. They're the champs of the NBA. That's true. Just because you have world players, and Andy and I have disagreed on this, but just because you have players from around the world playing in the league doesn't mean you're the best team in the world. And so he made those guys really mad, and they got all fired up. And then when they won the gold medal, it's like, hey, Noah Lyles, what do you think now? Well, NBA guys playing in the Olympics, excuse me, it's not like the San Antonio Spurs won the Olympics. The United States Olympic basketball team won the gold medal. So you're missing the point completely. His thought was, you're not world champions if you win the NBA. You're the NBA champions. That's true. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Are you the world champions if you win the Super Bowl? Oh, maybe, because except you didn't play the best team in Canada.
Yeah, nobody except a couple of pockets is playing American football.
Right, but that still doesn't make you the world champions. It makes you the Super Bowl champions. But Noah Lyles got, oh man, everybody was mad at him. And they're so mad, the NBA guys are going back and forth with him, which is rough. And then Tyreek Hill, of all people, is sitting and doing an interview at Dolphins training camp, and was asked about Noah Lyles.
audio courtesy of Up and Adams, which is where he was on with Kay Adams on, I believe that's FanDuel TV.
All right. He's caught an awful lot of grief for the COVID announcement, which I thought was interesting. You know, and after he lost the race and finished third for the bronze in the 200 meter, then it's revealed that he has COVID and he was taken off in a wheelchair. And that seemed a little odd. I will say that, but the guy was clearly dealing with some issues according to the medical personnel and everything else. And I thought he handled it fairly well, but he's been thrown under the bus for it. Now all of a sudden he has COVID. Okay. Well, whatever. Tyreek Hill is delusional if he thinks he can beat Noah Lyles in a race. I'm sorry.
Correct.
He might be able to beat him in a 40 because Noah Lyles' strength as a 100-meter guy is his final 50 meters.
Yeah, his starts aren't exactly...
Right. He comes peak. On.
Mm-hmm.
He comes on.
Yeah.
But, Dan, you coach high school track.
Yes.
You're not a track expert, but
you
have a lot more exposure to it than I do. There is
fast, and there is track fast, and there is 100-meter fast. There is a reason why in that race you are called the fastest man in the world when you are done, or the fastest woman in the world when you are done, because there is fast, and Tyreek Hill is fast, and then there is track fast. And let me give you a little bit. This is courtesy of CBS, who adds this in. Tyreek Hill's top speed in his entire career was in 2016. Since we now have this next-gen stats, we can measure these things. He hit 23.24 miles per hour on a 27-yard kickoff return.
23.24.
Okay?
Got it.
That's fast. Yes. No one's going to doubt that.
Of course it's fast.
That's pretty darn fast. That's probably faster than everybody who is listening to this can run. Might be a select few who it's not the case. But the vast majority of us, that is way faster. Noah Lyles hit a speed of more than 27 miles per hour.
In the 100?
In the 100.
In winning the gold just recently.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Hitting the gold recently.
Wow.
Okay? And you saw how close that race was with everybody around him.
All eight people were within 0.12 seconds, I believe.
Yeah. There is fast.
Closest 100 ever.
And there is track fast.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
It is the most truthful thing on this earth when you watch the Olympics, you watch the Pan Am Games, you watch any of those things. Even you watch the NCAA championships when they come up in the spring. There is fast and there is track fast. And track fast is on a different level than what you are going to watch on Sundays in the NFL. I mean, Anthony Schwartz was fast. There's a reason why Anthony Schwartz found his way into the NFL and wasn't running track professionally.
And he was fast.
He was fast.
What would he have, the fastest 100 of any 18-year-old ever or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
There's one other Olympic thing. I'm going to bring it up when Andy comes back, but I'm going to throw it out to you right now, and then we're going to get ready for Chris Rose. The U.S. high jumper, Shelby McEwen, he was tied at the end of the high jump with the guy from New Zealand, Hamish Kerr, and they then missed. They both cleared 2.36 and then missed. And they were offered the option of sharing the gold medal.
Mm-hmm. I saw this.
And McEwen said no. And then he lost the jump off and got silver.
Just take the gold.
That's what I would have done.
No one is ever going to know that you tied it outside of your family who want to bust your chops.
I won a gold medal. Look, it's a gold medal.
Your family will bust your chops and your friends will bust your chops, and both because they love you. Those are the only people who are going to do it. Anybody else is going to, holy mackerel, you have a gold medal?
Oddly enough, the two guys in the jump-off missed 11 straight jumps, and then it was lowered to the point the Kerr actually cleared one. We'll talk with Andy about this, because you know, he and I are going to go nuts on that. You can tell. It's going to be great fun. Chris Rose, TV voice on the Browns preseason television network, coming up next on Baskin and Phelps. I'm Jeff Phelps. Baskin's out today. Menigan's in today. I think I've made this clear to you, Dan. One of my goals in life is something that you achieved today. And that is to win the lottery.
Yes, I am a proud winner of a lottery.
Now, it's not the lottery that I've wanted to win, but you've won a lottery. And I am impressed nonetheless because I want to win a lottery. I want to win, actually, you know, Mega Millions, Powerball. Right. But by God, at this point, I'll settle for any lottery.
And
the one you won.
And we'll know you've hit that lottery.
When I don't show up.
We never see you again.
And the million that I promised both you and Baskin shows up in your accounts, and you've never seen me.
When you go full bloke Johnny Carson, we never see you ever again.
Good night, everybody.
You're just out on a farm somewhere at your home in L.A., just enjoying life.
It's going to be great.
So I was informed this morning that hopefully I have been offered tickets.
This is phenomenal.
To the Open Championship in Northern Ireland.
That's awesome.
I know. I'm pumped.
International correspondent Dan Menigan calling us from the Open, also known as the British Open, but the Open Championship next year outside of Dublin?
Outside of Belfast.
Outside of Northern Belfast.
Ireland. Yeah, we're in English territory. We're in the King's Land.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So.
So you found out when?
So I found out this morning. Now,
You just went to your email and there it was?
Uh-huh. Congratulations.
Did you just start laughing?
It was one of those, I started smiling and I went down and the lady friend looks up at me and she goes, oh God, what? Which, first thing, my joy bringing her this much disdain, I think truly is a peak moment in our relationship.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. When my joy brings that level of disdain, life is good.
And is it tickets for all four rounds?
No. So it's only right now for Thursday.
Really?
Hmm. So the first day of the Open Championship.
So you'd have to go all the way over there and just see the first round.
Correct. I'm still calling it worth it. It is
now,
a major.
And let's be all open here. You've talked about it before. You went to Ireland just a couple of months ago.
Right.
So you're almost familiar.
So we're working to find a fourth job to help cover this kind of thing, along with a third job.
We're gonna open a GoFundMe for Menigan. Send
much.
Me to the Open.
Send me to the Open, please. No, but no, do not. But yeah, so we're gonna try to make this work. I've got the travel agent on it, aka the lady friend, and she is currently busting her chops to figure out how we can get this to work, and working her butt off to figure out all of the finances, where to stay, where to sit, all that kind of stuff, so that I can go walk around a giant plot of land that has been there for a very long time and watch people hit a golf ball as it rains on top of both of us. And she looks at me and goes, I hate you.
We spent how much money to come over here and stand in the rain?
And why are we standing in the rain wind is whipping?
Yeah, why am I wearing my winter coat?
Exactly.
July.
I don't think she totally knows that part yet. I'll probably have to break that to her tonight.
That'll be great.
And then it'll be really fun when I'm having to go by myself because she's like, I'm not going to stand there in a giant lawn that's been mowed nicely and freeze my butt off. That's ridiculous.
Hey, don't tell her. just don't tell her.
I feel like I should just due to the fact that, like, I think I'll get in more trouble if I don't.
Once you've invested money in it, you can go ahead and tell her.
I feel like if I don't, I'm going to be in more trouble. I think I could take the initial blow the minute she finds out and then maybe can rebuild from there.
That's all right. That's not a bad idea.
So, yeah, we might. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but you might have your Open Championship correspondent live from the Open as I hold a Guinness in my hand and talk to you.
That would be great.
At 10:15 in the morning.
I'm already looking forward to it. We've booked you, so get ready to go.
All right.
There's another international competition that just ended, and we're not going to go heavy on the Olympics here, but I've been thinking about this for several days, and I want your thoughts on this, Dano. Who in the heck did Noah Lyles make mad by speaking the truth? Okay? The man who won the 100-meter gold medal in the Olympics beforehand had dropped these words. Now, granted, he's a little out there when it comes to his ego.
He's a very confident young man.
Very confident. By the way,
you have to be to run that race.
I think he's terrific myself. And, you know, he's not afraid to speak. He comes out. He brings energy. He's going nuts. He pumps up his sport. He pumps up himself. I like the guy. He's cocky, but I like him. And he just made the comment when talking about world championships before the Olympics, and he said, you know, the NBA, he said, why do they say world championship? They're not the world champs. They're the champs of the NBA. That's true. Just because you have world players, and Andy and I have disagreed on this, mm-hmm. but just because you have players from around the world playing in the league doesn't mean you're the best team in the world. And so he made those guys really mad, and they got all fired up. And then when they won the gold medal, it's like, hey, Noah Lyles, what do you think now? Well, NBA guys playing in the Olympics, excuse me, it's not like the San Antonio Spurs won the Olympics. The United States Olympic basketball team won the gold medal. So you're missing the point completely. His thought was, you're not world champions if you win the NBA. You're the NBA champions. That's true. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Are you the world champions if you win the Super Bowl? Oh, maybe, because
nobody
except you didn't play the best team in Canada.
Yeah, nobody except a couple of pockets is playing American football.
Right, but that still doesn't make you the world champions. It makes you the Super Bowl champions. But Noah Lyles got, oh man, everybody was mad at him. And they're so mad, the NBA guys are going back and forth with him, which is rough. And then Tyreek Hill, of all people, is sitting and doing an interview at Dolphins training camp and was asked about Noah Lyles.
Audio courtesy of Up and Adams, which is where he was on with Kay Adams on, I believe that's FanDuel TV.
All right. He's caught an awful lot of grief for the COVID announcement, which I thought was interesting. You know, and after he lost the race and finished third for the bronze in the 200 meter, then it's revealed that he has COVID and he was taken off in a wheelchair. And that seemed a little odd, I will say that, but the guy was clearly dealing with some issues according to the medical personnel and everything else. And I thought he handled it fairly well, but he's been thrown under the bus for it. Now all of a sudden he has COVID. Okay, well, whatever. Tyreek Hill is delusional if he thinks he can beat Noah Lyles in a race. I'm sorry.
Correct.
He might be able to beat him in a 40 because Noah Lyles' strength as a 100-meter guy is his final 50 meters.
Yeah, his starts aren't exactly...
Right, he comes peak. On.
Mm-hmm.
He comes on.
Yeah.
But, Dan, you coach high school track.
Yes.
You're not a track expert, but
you
have a lot more exposure to it than I do. There is
fast, and there is track fast. And there is 100-meter fast. There is a reason why in that race you are called the fastest man in the world when you are done, or the fastest woman in the world when you are done, because there is fast, and Tyreek Hill is fast, and then there is track fast. And let me give you a little bit. This is courtesy of CBS, who adds this in. Tyreek Hill's top speed in his entire career was in 2016. Since we now have this next gen stats, we can measure these things. He hit 23.24 miles per hour on a 27-yard kickoff return.
23.24.
Okay?
Got it.
That's fast. Yes, no one's going to doubt that.
Of course it's fast.
That's pretty darn fast. That's probably faster than everybody who is listening to this can run. Might be a select few who it's not the case, but the vast majority of us, that is way faster. Noah Lyles hit a speed of more than 27 miles per hour.
In the 100. In winning the gold just recently.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Hitting the gold recently.
Wow.
Okay? And you saw how close that race was with everybody around him.
All eight people were within 0.12 seconds, I believe.
Yeah. There is fast.
Closest 100 ever.
And there is track fast.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
It is the most truthful thing on this earth when you watch the Olympics, you watch the Pan Am Games, you watch any of those things. Even you watch the NCAA championships when they come up in the spring, there is fast and there is track fast. And track fast is on a different level than what you are going to watch on Sundays in the NFL. I mean, Anthony Schwartz was fast. There's a reason why Anthony Schwartz found his way into the NFL and wasn't running track professionally.
And he was fast.
He was fast.
Well, we have the fastest 100 of any 18-year-old ever or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other Olympic thing. I'm going to bring it up when Andy comes back, but I'm going to throw it out to you right now, and then we're going to get ready for Chris Rose. The U.S. high jumper, Shelby McEwen, He was tied at the end of the high jump with the guy from New Zealand, Hamish Kerr, and they then missed. They both cleared 2.36 and then missed, and they were offered the option of sharing the gold medal.
Mm-hmm. I saw this.
And McEwen said no. And then he lost the jump off and got silver.
Just take the gold.
Just take the... That's what I would have done.
No one is ever going to know that you tied it outside of your family who want to bust your chops.
I want a gold medal. Look, it's a gold medal.
Your family will bust your chops and your friends will bust your chops, and both because they love you. Those are the only people who are going to do it. Anybody else is going to... Holy mackerel, you have a gold medal?
Oddly enough, the two guys in the jump off missed 11 straight jumps. And then it was lowered to the point the Kerr actually cleared one. We'll talk with Andy about this because you know he and I are going to go nuts on that. You can tell. It's going to be great fun. Chris Rose, TV voice on the Browns preseason television network, coming up next on Baskin and Phelps.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.